Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the March NJEDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad and to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, operator. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing and comments are invited on any private activity bonds projects presented today. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, if we could do a roll call, please.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Farlow.
Here.
Noreen Giblin, Governor's Office.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Caridi.
Present.
Jennifer Maloney for State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Paul Ewan for Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Okay, Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Rosemary Hicks.
Present.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Phil Elagia, Fred Dumont,
but this is the issue that's been going on.
Aisha Glover.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. Board members, we have a very full agenda today. It's a variable marathon session with something on the order of 24, 25, or 26 votes to be taken. The first vote we need to approve is our regular meeting minutes from our February 9th board meeting. And again, I would ask you to please state your name when making a motion or a second. Can I get a motion to approve the February 9th regular meeting minutes?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Bauer second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Let me go to the chairman's remarks. Every March since 1987, we celebrate Women's History Month. Supporting women-owned businesses and striving for equality for women in the workforce are key and key focuses of Governor Murphy's vision for a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. Sorry, that's in reference to the war going on in the Ukraine. Notably, 60% of the Murphy administration's cabinet-level positions are filled by women. At the EDA, 9 of our 15 board positions are filled by women. Through First Lady Tammy Murphy's Nurture New Jersey initiative, the Murphy administration is advancing its commitment to greater equity for women in the area of health care. Today, the board will be asked to approve a memorandum of understanding with Keene University to support the first phase of planning activities for a proposed Trenton-based maternal and infant health innovation center. We are still dealing with the ongoing impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, but businesses continue to adapt and become more resilient. The New Jersey EDA has recently taken important steps to create and launch the Economic Recovery Act programs. Just over a month ago, we opened the application for the Aspire program, paving the way for the advancement of commercial and residential projects in long overlooked communities. We also launched the Main Street Business Improvement Grant in February. At the same time, the EDA continues to drive the governor's economic growth priorities through a wide variety of programs and initiatives. As construction continues on the New Jersey wind port, the EDA is taking steps with others to advance the state's offshore wind industry. Our Sustain and Serve New Jersey program has funded the purchase of more than 3.3 million meals and continues to support restaurants and fight food insecurity in cities all over New Jersey. Applications for Phase 3 funding opened last week. Today, the board will consider the award of a $2 million Arts and Innovation Festival grant for a world-class festival that brings attention and resources to New Jersey's arts and technology communities and sets the stage for long-term growth. The authority remains laser-focused on advancing programs that create good jobs, build vibrant communities, and create economic resilience for all New Jerseyans. I'd like to give a special thanks to the women of the EDA, both our board members and staff, during this month of March. I'd also special shout out to Irish Americans and those who love them. We celebrate St. Patrick's Day on March 17th. Tim?
Is that for
the
me to
CEO's
comment?
Report.
Is that for me to wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day, or would you like me to do the CEO report? I can do both.
You can do both.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone.
Also, good morning. Sorry, Aisha Glover joined before you start, Tim. Thank you.
Hey, Aisha. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, there's a lot to get through today, so I'll be brief, but I also have a lot of good updates to provide, and I also have a special letter that I've just received from Governor Murphy that I want to tell you about as it relates to Dave Noose in a few minutes. A couple things I just comment on. One, the governor had his very last, I believe it was his 257th COVID-19 briefing on Friday. One of the things he highlighted in that was the work that the EDA has done to support small businesses during the pandemic. More than 94,000 grants, loans, guarantees, and technical assistance, more than $710 million. You know, the governor was able to highlight a significant number of NJEDA supported small businesses during the governor's briefing. So, and he had some very kind words for our team and for our program. So first and foremost, I want to thank the governor for his leadership during the pandemic and his extraordinary support of allocation of resources to small business during the pandemic, but also for his kind words for our team and for our programs on Friday. I hope it's the last program that's a COVID sort of specific driven program is Sustain and Serve that Kevin mentioned earlier, which continues to be an extraordinary program. Applications open for that for the third round in last week, and they'll be open through April 1st. One of the first ladies guests at the budget speech yesterday was the owner of a restaurant in Long Branch that the governor I visited back in February, has been a significant recipient of and beneficiary of those. Of that program, so a great moment to highlight the success of that program. a couple of things I'll mention that relate to the budget speech yesterday, and saw several of you yesterday, and it was great to see everybody in person yesterday. One of the things the governor highlighted, which is central to the work that we do here at the EDA and on behalf of the governor, is the innovation economy. The governor mentioned some great stats that we put out late last week, earlier this week. The amount of venture capital that has been raised by New Jersey companies has grown from $818 million in 2017 to $5.5 billion in 2021. We've grown our ranking from 16th back in 2013 to 9th in 2021. So 9th is not where we want to be either, but we're climbing the ladder in a strong way and excited about that. You know, we'll be back at subsequent board meetings talking about things we can do to further catalyze the innovation ecosystem, including the Innovation Evergreen Fund, which the governor also talked about in his budget yesterday, as well as things like the Black and Latino Seed Fund, which the governor proposed an additional $10 million of funding for in the budget yesterday. A number of exciting innovation-related things coming down the pike as well to support continue that growth. As I mentioned, the budget yesterday was full of good news for the EDA and for the programs that we support. Another big round of support or proposed support from the governor for things like the Main Street program, again, the Black and Latino Seed Fund, the new $65 million proposal for real estate projects, including a $20 million diverse developers fund, kind of a cousin or companion to the seed fund on the entrepreneurial side. This is to support, proposed to support developers of color and women who struggle to access capital to advance development projects, real estate development projects. Lots more detail to be worked out on that, as and if the legislature agrees with the governor's recommendation to do that. But again, just an extraordinary allocation of resources to the EDA and for economic growth and economic development, particularly inclusive economic development, including the governor's speech yesterday. Just before I wrap up, two kind of personnel-related things I want to mention, and I think you know all these things, but just to remind everybody, Brian Sabina had let me know, and we announced in January that he was going to be stepping down from his role as Chief Economic Growth Officer. Good news is he's stepping from that role into sort of a senior advisor role through the summer, so we've got plenty of time to sort of say all the things that are on my mind and my heart about Brian, but he's an extraordinary leader of so many of our key efforts and who will be missed beyond measure. But the good news is we're in the fortunate position of being able to both attract great talent and have a great deep bench of managers and leaders within the organization. So we announced last week that Kathleen Coviello, who leads so many of our efforts, is going to step up even further and is going to be our new Chief Economic Competitiveness Officer, overseeing our sector teams, a lot of our tax credit programs, the innovation programs that she has pioneered and built, as well as our product operations teams. And be a direct report to me. And then Mary Maples, who some of you may remember from being around this board table as recently as 2018, when she was the director of GAU and the deputy chief counsel for Governor Murphy, and has since been the chief counsel and chief legal officer at University Hospital during a pandemic. So I can only imagine the amount of lessons learned and things she's seen and been a part of at a trauma center during a global health pandemic. She's going to join as our chief strategy officer. She'll be working closely and overseeing our real estate and our infrastructure team, as well as our relationship with Fort Monmouth and doing being responsible for our strategic planning. So we'll be working with the board directly on a lot of those things. And Mary is a great person, and I'm thrilled, again, to be able to have a deep bench of folks like Kathleen that can step up and take on big responsibilities and to be able to attract great talent with Mary and lots of other folks who are joining the organization. I think puts us in help us keep our best, you know, put a strong foot forward as we continue to advance Governor Murphy's economic development agenda. The last thing I'll mention is that's kind of bittersweet. To welcome new colleagues and bid adieu to Brian is bittersweet. Similarly, Dave Noose, who has been one of the longtime rocks of this organization, joined the EDA in 1988, is retiring on April 1st. I have here in front of me a letter from Governor Murphy to Dave, which I will get him the original. I've got a photocopy of it, but I'll just read a couple highlights of it. Dear Dave Noose, it's my honor to congratulate you on your retirement from your incredible career with the state of New Jersey at the NJEDA, the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, and the Jersey City Redevelopment Agency. Your unwavering commitment to economic development was clear in every role you held at the EDA. The strong economic development of our state is in part due to your skillful management of NJEDA's real estate development activities over the past several decades. Whether it was your advancement of the new health and taxation buildings in Trenton, the redevelopment of Fort Monmouth, the creation of NJEDA Trenton headquarters, your relaxed, methodical method of articulation, explanation of issues always resulted in better understanding, reduced tension, and frequent agreement among all participants. On behalf of the state of New Jersey, I applaud you for your selfless dedication. Your career, the state of New Jersey will benefit from your hard work and endless contributions for years to come. Congratulations again, and best wishes for last health and happiness. Your best, Philip Murphy, Governor. So I hope everyone will join me in wishing Dave nothing but happiness and health in his retirement, and we hope he will. His legacy is strong and enduring here at the EDA. And just as a personal note, one of the all-time great people to have as a colleague and a teammate, not only as an enormously capable person, but a nice person who's great to work with and brings incredible leadership and skills to the table. So, Dave, cheers to you. You will be extremely missed, but you will be your legacy lives on here forever. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll hand the floor back to you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is Charles Roth. If I may, I'd like to also...
Sure, please.
Thank you, Chair. As Chairman of the Real Estate Development Group, obviously I've worked with David for a long period of time, and I also want to publicly acknowledge, congratulate him on his retirement, but also echo what Tim and the Governor has said about David. I mean, he's just been a dedicated professional to the EDA. He was with the EDA before my tenure as a board member, but I got to know David when working with him very close. He's always been very respectful in every manner, and he's just been a steady guiding force for the whole real estate department. And as noted in the letter that Tim read, and what Tim has said, he's driven many complex projects to successful completion, and his leadership will certainly be missed. So we wish I personally wish David all the best in his retirement.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
Let's move on and power through our agenda here. The first handful of items we have to vote on are policy committee related, and I'd like to highlight a few of these measures that we consider this month. One is support for the new Trenton-based Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center, the advancement of offshore wind MOUs with higher education institutions, and the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Grant Award. I want to applaud the efforts of the EDA and our partners in promoting programs that can make a difference in the everyday lives of New Jersey residents in terms of healthcare, job creation, and community building. First item is adoption of amended and restated bylaws and board policy on delegation of authority. Christine Baker, Chief Legal and Strategic Affairs Officer, presenting. Christine.
Thank you, Chairman. Today, we are asking the board to approve a new delegation policy as well as proposed amendments to the bylaws. This is consistent with feedback from the members and also recommendations from the board governance consultant that was engaged by the authority. The changes to the bylaws are intended to better reflect the authority's structure and to conform with best practices. Some changes were made to better reflect the world that we live in, like permitting members to participate in meetings via video and or web conference in addition to conference calls, and permitting electronic signatures. Other changes were essentially cleanup to reflect applicable law, like permitting emergency meetings consistent with the Open Public Meetings Act. All of those material changes are summarized in the board memo, and we have provided a redline version so that the members can see exactly what will change. Additionally, the members are asked to approve a new delegation of authority policy. Among other feedback, the board governance consultant recommended that the vast majority of delegations from the board should be to the CEO, who in turn should retain the authority for further sub-delegations. This gives the board a single point of responsibility and will obviate the need to return to the board when we have staffing or other organizational changes. The intent is to clarify that the board's focus should be on high-level decision-making, policy setting, approving new programs, but should delegate most programmatic and transactional decisions to the CEO, subject, of course, to any conditions the board may impose to ensure appropriate oversight, like reporting requirements or dollar thresholds or other specified criteria. The proposed policy provides that the board will delegate authority to the CEO, and it permits the CEO to delegate to his subordinates unless the board has specifically required the CEO to act personally. I know we have a very full agenda today, so I'm going to stop there, but I'm happy to answer any questions or go into greater detail on any of the other bylaw changes as the board wishes.
Any questions for Chris? If we have no questions for Chris, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, Memorandum of Understanding with King University to support Trenton community engagement and planning for Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. Tara Colton, Executive Vice President, Economic Security, presenting. Tara.
Yeah, I'll just, it's Tim, let me just jump in. Tara and I pre-planned this, I'm not interrupting Tara. I'm just going to give 30 seconds of context here before Tara and then Juan, the next item. They're both kind of related to the Trenton Maternal Infant Health Innovation Center. This is something that First Lady Tammy Murphy has been championing as part of her Nurture NJ comprehensive approach to eradicating the disparity between moms of color, particularly black women, and the overall population in New Jersey, and also making New Jersey the safest place to deliver and have a child in America. This is one of many initiatives that are under that umbrella of Nurture NJ. The governor talked about this also, talked about Nurture NJ and that commitment in his budget address yesterday. There are budget resources that were put into the budget that was approved in July to support the kind of activities we're talking about here. We're talking about developing a kind of first in the nation dedicated, comprehensive, academic, clinical, policy research center in downtown Trenton. Where exactly in downtown Trenton, we don't know yet. One of the exercises that some of the work that's being described in the next two items will help us figure out exactly where to do it. But this is an opportunity to bring some more non-state government jobs and activity to downtown Trenton to do a ton of great policy and healthcare outcomes work vis-a-vis the citizens of Trenton, the residents of Trenton, particularly you know, moms who are either expecting or planning to have children. So there's a number of benefits here are extraordinary, and again, I want to thank the First Lady for her championing of this and her allowing us to be a part of the effort to make a difference here. So with that, Tara, take us away.
Great. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Chairman. So I am proud to be presenting a request today to enter into an MOU with Kane University's John F. Watson Institute for Urban Policy and Research to use $250,000 of the $2.9 million that Tim just referenced that was appropriated to EDA in the FY22 budget for the first phase of planning activities related to establishing the Trenton-based Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. This is building on the First Lady's tremendous leadership and vision on this issue, and as Tim said, really represents a critical investment in Governor Murphy's commitment to growing the innovation economy. I also want to thank our sister agency partners at the Department of Health, Department of Human Services, Office of Secretary of Higher Education, and Treasury, who continue to work hand-in-hand with us as we build out this vision. So as a sobering statistic, New Jersey ranks 47th in the nation for maternal deaths and has one of the widest racial disparities for both maternal and infant mortality. A black mother in New Jersey is 7 times more likely than a white mother to die from maternity-related complications, and a black baby is over 3 times more likely than a white baby to die before their first birthday. This is what Nurture New Jersey is squarely focused on and is guided by a strategic plan that came out last year, which included nearly 100 recommendations, including the establishment of a center in Trenton focused on addressing and mitigating these issues while also catalyzing innovation. So we knew that the EDA would be at the heart of this effort, and last year we issued a request for information to seek input on the establishment of the center and received more than 50 responses. Respondents strongly emphasized that planning for the center needed to be community-driven, that there needed to be ample and ongoing opportunities for Trenton community members and stakeholders to offer their perspectives on the center's service offering, partnership, and how to best leverage existing community assets in the city of Trenton. So to do exactly that, and to do it with integrity and rigor and respect and deep knowledge of the Trenton community and the available services as well as the gaps in services within the city, this MOU will fund the Watson Institute to conduct outreach to and engage with impacted communities and organizational stakeholders. The Watson Institute will also work with Stockton University as part of this MOU to draw on their expertise in community engagement initiatives. The Watson Institute's work will have a particular focus on hearing from residents about which services are most needed, potential site locations for the center, deepening our understanding of the current landscape of service offerings for expectant parents and young children in Trenton, and engaging with the existing community of service providers in the city. I want to thank the leadership at Kane, including President Repelet and Barbara George Johnson, Vice President of External Affairs and Urban Policy and Research, who leads the Watson Institute, as well as the team at EDA in helping to lead the development of this partnership, including Ty Cooper, Emily Apple, and Diana Rogers, as well as our real estate team, who you will hear from shortly. We are thrilled to have such esteemed experts to help us, quite simply, do this right and get this right. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Tara?
Hi, this is Rose Marie. I have a quick question. As we're putting this program or standing this up, are we also looking at the folks that are going to be supporting this in terms of the ethnicity? You know, I know that I always talk about the equity, inclusion, diversity, et cetera, especially if we're focusing on primarily Black mothers or prospective moms, we need to make sure that the folks that are reaching out do tend to look like the folks they're servicing. And I don't know what the senior staff or what these folks look like, who they are, or those backgrounds, but I just think that we need to continue to make sure that we're looking at that as we stand up new programs. And I know I had requested that there be a review by Michelle's group, just to say that, yes, we reviewed it and everything looks fine.
Hey, Rosemary, it's Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, how are you? So I agree with the premise of what you said 100% in terms of, having, particularly doing the outreach, folks that will resonate with the community that we're talking about here in Trenton. Without getting into kind of line-by-line demographics, I think the team at Kane is led by, a woman of color, and her team, I think, will well represent and well resonate with the community here in Trenton. I agree with you 100%. I think we're good there.
Great. Thanks so much.
And, Tim, if I can, this is Ty. Also, Rosemary, really quickly, so we're also working with Dr. Ruffalo, who's one of the several Black presidents over universities or colleges in New Jersey, and with Barbara George Johnson and her team, they ran the Urban Mayors Institute out of an entity in Trenton, so they're very familiar with the landscape, very familiar with the key players. And I will just say Tara and her team, Emily especially, have been doing a phenomenal job making sure that they're reaching out to the community, hyper-cognizant just about demographic background, and also who they're servicing. And so that's a sensitivity that Tara and Emily and Barbara and Tim and our entire team have been thinking about. So I'm glad, A, you said it, but B, I'm glad we're also doing the work. And would love to make sure you also meet Barbara George Johnson and her team, who are going to do a phenomenal job.
Thanks, Ty. It's good to hear.
Any other questions for Tara? If we have no questions for Tara, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer,
so moved. Aisha.
Thank you, Jenny. Aisha, can I make that a second?
You sure can.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item. Third Amendment to the Real Estate Advisory Consulting Services Contract between Jones Lang LaSalle Americas, Inc. and the Authority. Juan Burgos, Director, Development and Finance, Real Estate. Juan.
Good morning, everyone. The members are asked to approve the Third Amendment to the Real Estate Advisory Consulting Services Contract between the Authority and Jones Lang LaSalle, which will add $300,000 to the contract and increase the amount to approximately $1.13 million. The existing contract balance and the requested additional funds will be used to commence the initial planning for the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center and to provide the necessary services for programs under the Economic Recovery Act. In March 2017, the member approved, and in May 2017, the Authority and JLL executed a $500,000 three-year contract, which included 2 one-year extensions, which could be exercised at the Authority's sole discretion. JLL's current contract will end in May 2022, but under the contract terms, JLL will continue to provide services on a month-to-month basis until a new vendor is selected through a request for proposals that will be issued later this year. IPM anticipates that the qualified vendors will be presented to the members on or about November 2022. There were two prior contract amendments. In June 2018, the members approved a $250,000 amendment to the contract, increasing the contract amount to $750,000. And in June 2021, through delegated authority, approximately $80,000 was added to the contract, which increased the contract balance to $829,750. The current contract balance is $75,225. The additional funds will be used as follows: to commence the initial planning for the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Center. The staff estimates that the initial planning work will be completed within 90 to 120 days from issuing a notice to proceed to authorize the work. The preliminary work will facilitate the proposed project schedule, receiving a certificate of occupancy approval on or before December 31st, 2025. The balance of the funds will be used to administer the following programs under the Economic Recovery Act: the Historical Property Reinvestment Program, various brownfields programs, and the Aspire Program. Do the members have any questions?
Any questions for Juan? If we have no questions for Juan, can I get a motion to approve?
Noreen Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Steve Maloney, second.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on our agenda, the New Jersey Wind Institute Fellowship Program and University Initiatives to Advance Offshore Wind MOUs. Fabio Arman, Senior Program Officer, Wind Institute Development. Fabio.
Thank you. Good morning, all. Again, my name is Fabio Arman, Senior Program Officer, Wind Institute Development. And before you are four MOUs with similar terms between NJEDA and Rutgers University, Rowan University, Montclair State University, and the New Jersey Institute of Technology. The MOUs will allow these four universities to participate in two programs. Number one, the Wind Institute Fellowship Program, and two, the University Initiative to Advance Offshore Wind. These programs will position these institutions to bolster research and learning in offshore wind. Collectively, these MOUs will provide up to $1,080,000 in total funding to the four schools by utilizing funding from the Offshore Wind Initiative's MOU signed between NJEDA and the NJ Board of Public Utilities dated July 14, 2021. To further put these programs into context, offshore wind is a strategic sector for New Jersey, and EDA is supporting the launch of the Wind Institute to accelerate workforce development and innovation in the state. Through these MOUs, the fellowship program, and university initiatives will strengthen linkages to offshore wind research by engaging New Jersey's top public research universities and expanding the number of people with offshore wind expertise in the state. We are piloting these programs at four public universities classified by the Carnegie Commission on Higher Education as R1, meaning very high research activity, or R2, high research activity. The following is an overview of the proposed programs. The fellowship program will encourage and support student research in topics that will further offshore wind in New Jersey and build student and faculty expertise in the industry. Participating fellows will conduct independent research under the tutelage of a faculty advisor at their home institution. They will come together across the four schools as a cohort to participate in industry trainings, guest lectures, site visits, and other activities to build knowledge and exposure to offshore wind. They will also conduct research over approximately 40 weeks, beginning no later than the fall of 2022 and ending no later than the summer of 2023. In April 2023, the fellows will present their findings at an offshore wind symposium that will be coordinated by NJEDA and the Wind Institute. Undergraduate fellows will receive $15,000 stipends. Graduate fellows will receive $30,000 stipends. And additionally, each fellow will have up to $1,000 for research and travel expenses. In support of the fellowship, each of the four schools will develop and implement a student recruitment and selection plan to engage a diverse group of students and faculty advisors. Schools will submit the names of fellows in a concept paper detailing the students' proposed project to EDA by no later than June 2022, and schools will also disperse and track the use of these funds. In support of the fellowship, NJEDA will coordinate the 5 to 8 cohort meetings that can include industry trainings, guest lectures, site visits, and presentations involving key offshore wind industry stakeholders, organize the New Jersey Wind Institute Fellowship Symposium, and provide the schools with funding for stipends as follows. Rutgers will receive $282,000 to support 6 undergraduate and 6 graduate fellows, and Rowan, Montclair, and JIT will each receive up to $94,000 to recruit up to 2 undergraduate and 2 graduate fellows each, for a total of 24 fellows across the four schools. The amounts provided to each school are generally proportional to the size of their student bodies. The second program included in an MOU is the University Initiative to Advance Offshore Wind. Through this program, schools will have the opportunity to submit proposals for up to $125,000 each for initiatives that build industry-valid expertise in offshore wind. Potential initiatives can include funding for curriculum development, pre- and postdoctoral student positions, or other activities to support offshore wind learning. EDA will review the proposed initiative and retains the option to approve, decline, or work with the schools to modify proposals. Overall, the MOUs for the schools have the same terms, except for Rutgers having a higher allocation of fellowship students to cover all chancellor-led units, including the New Brunswick, Newark, and Camden campuses. In summary, we are asking the board to approve the four MOUs that will provide a total of up to $1,080,000 in funding between the four universities for the fellowship program and the university initiatives. Thank you very much. Happy to take any questions.
Do we have any questions for Fabio? If we have no questions for Fabio, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on our agenda is a memorandum of understanding between the EDA and Capital City Redevelopment Corporation. Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, presenting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The members are asked to approve a new memorandum of understanding between the authority and the Capital City Redevelopment Corporation, confirming the mutual understanding and intention between the agencies with respect to the provision of support services by the authority to the CCRC. This MOU was approved by the CCRC at its annual Board of Directors meeting on February 23, 2022. CCRC was created in 1987 as an instrumentality of the state to plan, coordinate, and promote development within the Capital District defined in the CCRC Act. The original MOU between the CCRC and the authority was executed in 2014 and has been renewed by mutual consent annually. As the original term of the MOU has expired, we are now requesting the CCRC Board to approve an updated version of the MOU with substantially similar terms. In recognition of the prioritization of the revitalization of the City of Trenton, supported by Governor Murphy's Executive Order 40, that established the state capital partnership coupled with the authority's capacity, EDA would continue to provide key support services as outlined in the attached MOU. In particular, the authority will provide staff and administrative services in support of CCRC, including but not limited to board governance, public information, policy and development assistance, legal services provided through the Attorney General's office. The authority will work with the CCRC and the City of Trenton to support specific project development. In these efforts, the authority would partner with additional state and county agencies and other stakeholders in support of the overall revitalization of the Capital District. Future transactional real estate activity may result in fee-for-service work, as agreed to by the parties, and is customary with how the real estate division customarily charges for its assistance. The MOU would remain in effect for 1 year and may be extended for 1 year upon mutual consent indefinitely and will become effective upon execution by both parties. So finally, again, the members' consent is requested to execute the MOU between the authority and CCRC, confirming the mutual understanding between the agencies with respect to the provision of the authority support services to the CCRC. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Danielle? If we have no questions for Danielle, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion by Jennifer Keys Maloney.
Thank you, Jen. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda, the New Jersey EDA, Andre and Ida Grant Program Additional Funding for Temporary Staff. Patience Purdy, Director, Strategic and Program Initiatives, presenting. Patience. Patience, we can't hear you.
Well, the mute button helps that.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Thanks, members of the board. And I think what is likely the shortest memo you'll see today is a request to increase funding for a purchase order issued to 22nd Century Technologies for up to an additional $150,000 of economic recovery funds for temporary employees hired to administer the Henry Ida Grant Program. I think everyone remembers Hurricane Henry at the end of August and Tropical Storm Ida in the beginning of September, dumping 10 inches or more of rainfall on the state of New Jersey and devastating New Jersey businesses. The original memo for that program is attached. The program was set up to provide rent and mortgage reimbursement for businesses impacted by either or both storms and was approved on September 8th. Because of our out-of-this-world IT and program staff, applications went live for that program on September 17th. And to date, we have approved nearly 1,000 applications for just under $3.5 million. Something different about the program was the application review process, significantly different in the amount of time needed to review individual applications, ensure that lease documents, mortgage documents, payment documents, and pictures of actual damage were accurate, real, and fit the program. We do have a small number of applications that are still under review for either approval or declination and over 150 appeals. This additional funding will allow us the time to carefully review what is remaining for final decision. And just in closing, kudos to our IT staff, Tom Murphy and his team, Rich Toro and his team for their ability to get this stood up so quickly and process these applications in a timely way, allowing us to get the funds out the door as quickly as possible. So the recommendation is the increase in funding for $150,000 to extend the PO with 22nd Century Technology. And I can
great.
Answer.
Do we have any? Do we have any questions for patients? If we have no questions for patients, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
I'm sorry, who was that? Who provided the second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? If we have no discussion, all in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, community development. Recommendation for grant award and declinations, New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant. John Costello, Program Manager, Policy and Data Analytics presenting. John.
Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the board, I ask you today to approve the award of the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant to the New Jersey Performing Arts Center for the purposes of creating an innovative festival combining arts and innovation that showcases our state as a premier destination for top-tier talent and firms in both the arts and innovation sectors. A little bit of background. This Festival Challenge Grant will act as Kickstarter capital for this New Jersey-focused arts and innovation festival. It will showcase our state as both a premier destination for top talent and firms in arts and innovation sectors, while also highlighting our state as a significant destination for arts and innovation-focused tourism. This $2 million award will help fund operational costs related to the festival with an expectation of holding this festival in the summer or fall of this year. The process. We received 12 applications prior to the deadline of January 21st. 8 were sent to the review committee for scoring as being deemed complete. This evaluation committee was comprised of 5 EDA staff members from our diversity and inclusion teams, economic transformation, community development, and strategic and program initiative sectors. The review and scoring was based on 6 factors: past experience, a vision statement which emphasized both the plan design and its policy alignment with the goals for a stronger and fairer New Jersey, a fundraising plan, a host municipality plan, which brings in the host community as festival participants, COVID safety, and a diversity plan to ensure the diversity across the entire project and project team. In the recommendation for the grant award, we again recommend the highest scoring application, the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, with an overall score of 97 points out of 100. This application has strategic partnerships with Tech United New Jersey, the producers of Propelify, and Absolutely Live, who have most recently produced the Saratoga Jazz Festival. They will create a multi-day festival spread over three cities, Newark, Asbury Park, and Atlantic City, during an approximately three-week span. The technology component will be spread over multiple days and will focus on emerging technologies and markets such as wellness technology, digital health, climate tech, e-gaming, cryptocurrency, and the revolution of connectivity sparked by 5G, the metaverse, and virtual reality technologies. The arts component will revolve around music, film, and comedy. The music and comedy segments will be hosted at multiple venues in Atlantic City, Newark, and Asbury Park. This will include both small, medium, and large-scale venues, and will have both traditional performers in music and comedy, while also making sure to highlight diverse talent from new media sectors. There will be a film component based out of both Atlantic City and Newark, which will leverage the work of the Montclair and Newark International Film Festivals, making sure to highlight diverse films and filmmakers. To conclude, we also recommend 11 applications received as well for declination as listed in Appendices A and B. In summary, we ask the board to approve the award of the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant to the New Jersey Performing Arts Center for the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm open for any questions.
Do we have any questions for John?
Hi, Rose Marie. I have a couple. Is there a reason or how was Atlantic City, Asbury Park, and Newark selected? Is Atlantic City because it's the furthest point south? And then, of course, Newark because it's the furthest point north? That's one question. The other question is regarding, I know it's a split between technology and the arts. Is one more heavily weighted than the other in terms of technology versus the arts? And my third question is going to be around on page 10, I forgot what page it was, but I think there's a comment that they, you know, I'm always suspect or have a concern when someone says they're going to try in terms of finding diverse filmmakers. And so those are my three questions.
Hey, Rosemary, it's Ty. I'll take the
Hey, Ty.
So a couple of things. I'm super excited about this initiative, and I will say with NJPAC, they received the highest score. I think John said 97 out of 100 points.
Yeah.
And one of the really important factors for us was to ensure, A, that the community was going to be involved across the board, but also that there was going to be a tremendous amount of diversity. And with the additional folks that NJPAC has partnered with, from Ken Gifford, who literally has built up a film industry supporting diverse BIPOC filmmakers throughout the state, he's a huge part of what's happening on that team. So that's something that we're taking very seriously. He also has been working with us with the Film Tax Credit and also with Daryl Isherwood. So he's firmly cemented in that space as far as ensuring that diversity is going to be included across the board in film and also innovation. So that's the first piece. The second piece is the reason that I'm not sure why NJPAC chose those three areas. Again, I think they wanted to make sure that they were doing the full state. Each applicant was allowed to push forward a proposal. The more holistic and statewide reach that was available was a great opportunity, I think, for us to showcase talent throughout the state. And again, at varying times, so North, South, and Central Jersey were a priority for NJPAC, and they've established those relationships. And then as far as how things are weighed, arts, technology, and innovation were all part of the scoring rubric, so they were weighed heavily on each one of the sides. Again, these are things that EDA and the state is trying to highlight, state of innovation, showing that we're one of the most diverse innovative states in the nation is incredibly important to us. And then again, with our film and arts, that's been a major part of what we've been pushing out through EDA. Again, we've been talking about arts as an economic engine, so it's really putting our money where our mouth is on that. And so excited about all those efforts combined, putting together a really great program.
I'm excited about this. I'm really glad that I'm not sure who thought of this wonderful brainchild, but I'm excited. I think it's a wonderful thing to do, and it's well past the time that we step into the glory of New Jersey. So I'm excited about it.
Me too, and I'll give Tim and I'll give the governor credit for this. This is their brainchild. They're super excited about this. So, and again, we're here to answer any other questions you have. You can always reach out to me afterwards or during for whatever you need.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions for John? If we have no questions for John, can I get a motion to approve? Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Dragon, a second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? There's no discussion. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Jennifer Keith,
right,
Aisha Glover.
Aisha Glover, I sit on the board of NJPAC.
Yeah, and Jennifer Keys Maloney, the treasurer, sits on NJPAC's board.
All righty, thank you. Next item on the agenda, New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program. Jason Miller, Senior Planner, Policy and Data Analytics, presenting. Jason.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. Today I'm proud to present a new pilot program that will provide much-needed assistance to initiate development throughout New Jersey. In the face of economic paradigm shifts, many properties around the state get left behind as underutilized, distressed, or vacant, unable to adjust to new and future needs. The places where people live and work and how to get around have shifted in many ways over the last century. Since World War II mobilization, we've seen suburbanization, an industrial decline, and more recent urban revitalization. Every region of New Jersey has seen growth or decline in some form or another. What's more, the innovation of development necessary to activate those assets are further complicated by the procedures of development itself, as deviation from prescribed uses and zoning require more rigorous planning and additional investment. As the most densely populated state and one of the smallest, it's critically important for New Jersey to make the most efficient use of developable land within its context. In recent years, EDA has received many requests from sister authorities and agencies for programs to address development needs exactly like these. The New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program will address these needs by assisting development projects through the funding of pre-development and proof-of-concept planning analyses. These grants will jumpstart forward-looking projects to activate deficient, underutilized, or vacant public assets in a way that will benefit their community and the regional economy. The application scoring will emphasize those features by assessing the project's improvement and asset utilization and the applicant's ability to identify and address the challenges that led to their distressed or underutilized conditions. This program expands on EDA's excellent experience in planning assistant programs. The GRM program focused on specific municipalities that needed consolidation of their catalog of plans in order to move projects forward. 21st Century Planning Grants focused on stranded office and retail assets that needed planning assistance to move forward. Whereas those programs were focused on particular geographies, assets, and applicants, this new program will be open to projects anywhere in New Jersey and a larger variety of applicants, which includes municipalities, counties, redevelopment agencies, independent authorities, nonprofit, and for-profit entities. Since the grant applications will be accepted on a rolling basis and evaluated on a first-in, first-out method, applications that meet the minimum score will be recommended for funding until funds are exhausted. Flexibility is designed into this program to gauge demand, with $200,000 for an initial pilot round to be dispersed in grants of up to $50,000 each, and delegated authority to extend another $200,000 in additional awards should the applications volume exceed the pilot round funding. In summary, we recommend approval of the creation of the New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program as a rolling grant program in which will advance the priorities of the governor's economic plan and develop the state's vision through funding of pre-development planning for projects that will activate distressed and underutilized public assets, benefiting the communities and the regional economy. We also recommend Economic Recovery Fund authorization of up to $400,000 to capitalize the program with $200,000 for an initial pilot program round, and delegated authority to extend another $200,000 to make additional awards should the application volume exceed the original funding amount. Finally, we recommend use of the delegated authority approved earlier in this meeting for the chief executive or delegated staff to decline applications that do not meet eligible requirements and to issue final administrative decisions for appeals of declinations based solely on non-discretionary reasons. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank George Santos and Ty Cooper and several other great EDA staff that helped bring this program to life, and especially John Costello for guiding me through this process. If there are any other questions about the program, we'd be happy to answer them now.
Great. Thank you, Jason. Do we have any questions for Jason?
Hi, it's Rosemary again. I just have one question, Jason. On the eligibility, I see that you have nonprofit entities as well as the municipality and the county. Can there be overlap, meaning can a nonprofit apply and municipality apply, and they both receive separate grants? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, is it one or the other? That was just my dangling sentence.
Well, the program requires one entity to become the primary entity of the application, and a municipality could have multiple entities under it apply for grants within the same jurisdiction.
So, and then, Ms. Hicks, if I can just also add in, this is John Costello, Mrs. Hicks.
Oh, thank John. Thank you.
Ms. Hicks, there's also an overlap. So if a nonprofit, say, for example, in the city of Trenton wanted to apply and the city of Trenton wanted to apply, they could both apply and both be awarded for separate projects within the city. So there's no exclusion based on geography.
Is that different than what's the name just said? I'm confused. So let's say if I'm a nonprofit, Mrs. Hicks, and then there's Camden, the municipality or the city. We can both apply as long as we're not applying for the same type of purpose. We could both receive it. Or if we both apply, then the nonprofit needs to contact the municipality and work through the municipality for that particular arm of the project.
You mean if you were applying for the same project as the chief funder of the same project, Ms. Hicks?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying that if I'm a nonprofit and a municipality, we're both in the same city. It may be a different project. So if we're a different project, the nonprofit just needs to have the city as a sponsor, or can the nonprofit apply and receive a grant that's different than the municipality's application and grant?
It's the second part. The nonprofit could apply and receive receive a grant on its own outside of the city.
Thank you. That was it.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for Jason and John? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
This is Rosemary. I motion to approve.
Great. I'll Thank second. You, Rosemary. Can I get a second?
Robert.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? Yeah. All in favor? Aye.
How
are
you doing?
Aye.
Aye.
Good.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's move to the next set of discussion.
Okay.
Of agenda items.
I'm trying to get my mind around all this. I think my husband is probably.
Can somebody go on mute, please?
Ask you some questions about it.
Very hard. To talk over you. Thank you. The next session is incentives related. Ginny Bauer, would you like to offer a few words in advance of these items?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yes, on February 24th, the Incentive Committee met. We have a very full agenda, a number of GROW items, a tax transfer appeal, as well as a number of film and digital media tax credits. So look out, Hollywood, New Jersey's here. That's about it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ginny. First set of items are GROW New Jersey related. Item number one, Wallach Beth Capital, LLC, a GROW New Jersey assistance program, COVID-related termination. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives, Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll actually take you through the first three requests today. So Wallach Beth Capital, this is a request for a termination, a COVID-related termination of its GROW incentive agreement under the new relief provisions of the Economic Recovery Act. So Wallach Beth is a registered broker-dealer that provides trading strategies and execution services to institutional clients. In February of 17, the members approved a $4.8 million 10-year GROW award to incent the creation of 55 new GROW-eligible jobs with an estimated capital investment of $465,000 at an existing 12,000-square-foot non-industrial qualified business facility, or QBF, located in Jersey City. In January of 18, Wallach Beth certified project completion with 46 new jobs. As a result, the award was decreased at the project certification to $3.7 million. They were able to maintain their required jobs through 2020. They issued annual tax credits for the years 17 through 20 for a total of $1.5 million in tax credits to date. The tax year 21 annual compliance is currently under review, final review at EDA. However, preliminary review for timeliness and job numbers indicate they may be eligible to receive a tax credit for that year. On January 7th, 21, that's when the ERA was amended, ERA amended the GROW New Jersey statute to afford GROW New Jersey businesses several relief measures in recognition of the negative effects that the COVID pandemic and the health emergency restrictions may have had on businesses. Specifically, the GROW law was amended to allow businesses to terminate their incentive agreements, provided that the businesses shall submit a certification from the CFO or equivalent officer stating that the termination was due to public health emergency impacts and describing those impacts to EDA. A termination under this provision results in a forfeiture of all tax credits for the tax period in which the termination occurred and all subsequent tax periods. The tax credits issued for previous years may be retained by the business without recapture, while the business is relieved of all ongoing reporting obligations. So as a result of Governor Murphy's executive order in March of 20 mandating that all non-essential businesses in New Jersey implement work-from-home arrangements, Wallach Beth did so and has continued to have a work-from-home policy to date. They request termination at this time because they anticipate challenges in talent retention. The law has been updated to require 60% of full-time employee time be at the qualified business facility, but they've determined that their talent pool is competitive in their marketplace, and they're having trouble maintaining folks or hiring with that sort of at-work requirement. We've looked at their current employment situation. They now have 39 GROW-eligible full-time positions, and determined that they meet the requirements of the COVID-related relief and ask members to approve them. If there's any questions, I'll be glad to take those.
Any questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Ginny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you. Ginny, can I get a second?
Second, Jennifer Keys Maloney.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, Interpool, Inc., GROW New Jersey Assistance Program COVID-related termination. We're staying with Susan. Susan, please.
Yes, sir. Interpool, doing business as Track Intermodal, is an intermodal chassis solution company providing marine and domestic chassis throughout North America. On May 16th of 14, the members approved a $9.8 million 10-year GROW award to incent the creation of 90 new jobs and the retention of 310 employees with an anticipated estimated capital investment of $7 million to relocate a 69,000-square-foot non-industrial facility to Plainsboro. In February of 2016, Interpool certified project completion with 65 new jobs and retention of 310 employees. As a result, the GROW award was decreased at certification to $8.8 million. Interpool maintained the required jobs through its 18 report and was issued a tax credits from 2015 to 2018 for a total of $3.1 million. They did not meet the job thresholds in 19 or 20. Forfeiting two consecutive tax periods is actually an event of default under the GROW agreement and subjects them to Interpool to a partial recapture of previously issued tax credits. Interpool indicated that its decline in staff in 2020 was part due to COVID-related decline in business, which resulted in the need to hire temporary workers that are not deemed to be incented under the GROW agreement. Staff concluded that these impacts didn't negate Interpool's obligation to maintain employment. Therefore, recapture is appropriate. However, that would not bar it from this COVID relief, provided that recapture payment was received before we terminate the agreement. So in October of 21, they formally requested to terminate. They had 291 employees before COVID. And that was the time that they sent all their folks home. They intended to complete a return to work kind of staged bring back by January 22nd. We saw change in the GROW law in July of 21 that changed the QBF requirement from 80% to 60%. They started to shift their plans to a hybrid work policy, but they still had challenges getting folks hired and situated and retaining employees when their talent pool found other options that were fully remote out in space. So they have continued to deal with temporary employees that would not be incented employment for purposes of the GROW. That, coupled with a disruption of their business operations and a decreased demand for their services, they've determined that they'd like to pursue this termination. Staff determined that they've met the requirements so long as we receive the outstanding recapture obligation. We support the members to approve a COVID-related termination for Interpool.
Great. Thank you, Susan. Do we have any questions for Susan? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Susan's got one more for us here. Laboratory
yes,
Corporation
sir.
Of America Holdings, modification, a GROW New Jersey assistance program. Susan.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is a modification of project scope that would decrease the capital investment for LabCorp's project from $150 million to $105 million. So Laboratory Corporation of America Holdings, which we all know as LabCorp, operates one of the largest clinical laboratory networks in the world, offering a broad range of routine and esoteric and genomic assays. In November of 17, the members approved a just under $40 million 10-year GROW award to incent the creation of 175 GROW-eligible jobs and the retention of 1,200 GROW-eligible jobs at a non-industrial premises consisting of 342,000 square foot comprised of multiple buildings in Raritan Borough. The total estimated capital investment at the QDF was $150 million. LabCorp had requested an additional year for certification
at the time of approval, as well as has come back for COVID-related extension, which put its project completion deadline at June 4th of 22. So the original project included three components. One, the renovation of existing warehouse. Second, a demolition of an existing building that would allow them to kind of shift their parking area and allow for extension of their main building, which is their laboratory space, where they wanted to add 109,000 square foot. And finally, to go throughout that laboratory space kind of incrementally and make updates and rehabs to that space. So LabCorp was able to be determined as essential to mitigate COVID-related construction delays over the last year or so. But the project still slowed, as the original plan required this incremental movement of lab staff, and with the increase, the pressure to increase testing capabilities in response to the need for COVID testing, LabCorp chose not to disrupt its laboratory space in the manner it originally had planned, and as a result, they've not completed that rehab of that internal renovation space in the laboratory building. At this point, they have a June deadline, certification deadline, that that they will cut off what costs have come to be in early, at the end of winter, to be able to certify for us and have a CPA review those costs and certify for us project completion. However, they will continue to work to complete the remainder of the anticipated project, paying prevailing wage and affirmative action, and green building compliance. So in other words, they will actually complete the full project, understood, but for GROW terms, it will be cut off at the $105 million mark so that they will be able to stay timely with the program and comply. So at this time, they've asked the members to consent to that reduction. This represents a 30% decrease in capital investment. Staff has determined that the GROW project remains essentially the same, albeit with a smaller capital investment. And EDA will continue to monitor the prevailing wage and affirmative action compliance for the remainder of the project. The total spend anticipated by the time of certification would be about $115 million. As I said, they would like to, they need that time for the certification review by a CPA, so they would like to cut it off at $105 million. At this point, they've got well over 1,300 employees and don't expect any change to the job commitments at this time. So to ensure that the modified project maintain program eligibility and continue to support the award, the staff revisited the analysis run at the approval time and determined that it met all requirements and continued to have sufficient net benefit. The award does not change in this commensurate with the capital investment, because the award actually was capped by LabCorp when they came in requesting only less than $40 million, when the calculation actually would have supported a much higher award at the time. So board action is needed because the change here is over the 25% delegation for staff approval. Again, we're asking the members to approve this decrease in capital investment from $150 to $105 million. You'll also notice there's a very slight change to square footage. We've also noted in here just from design changes that have occurred to date. Are there any questions I might answer for you all?
Questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion.
Who was that? Who made the motion, please?
Jennifer Keesley.
Thank you, Jen. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on in the agenda. The next two items on the agenda relate to hearing officers' recommendations regarding application declinations and the applicant's appeal of the same. Prior to the board's vote on each item, pursuant to the authority's public comment policy, a single person speaking on behalf of the applicant appealing the decision will be permitted to speak to the board before the board's vote on the appeal. For the next two items, the hearing officer will present. The board will then acknowledge one person for the applicant if he or she wishes to speak before the board takes a vote. The board serves as the final decision maker. If the applicant is dissatisfied with the board's final administrative decision, it may appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of New Jersey pursuant to the rules of the court. The first item is a declination regarding Ritz Hotel Services, Inc., Grow New Jersey appeal. Marcus Salduti, Senior Legal Affairs Officer, Legal Affairs presented. Marcus.
Good morning, everyone. This request is to accept the hearing officer's recommendation upholding the board's declination of the Ritz Hotel Services Grow New Jersey application. As requested, I served as the hearing officer to independently review this appeal. On June 27, 2019, Ritz submitted a Grow New Jersey application in connection with its evaluation of sites to operate its commercial laundry business. The application represented an option to renovate and expand at its current facility in Paterson, New Jersey, or lease space in Suffern, New York. During the January 15, 2021 board meeting, the board declined the application of Ritz. Staff could not recommend that the company demonstrated the award would be a material factor to remain in New Jersey. In making this determination, the EDA concluded New Jersey is the more costly option due solely to a payroll differential, and that the company failed to provide an updated letter of intent. On February 22, 2021, Ritz timely submitted its appeal, in which it challenges, number one, the point-in-time methodology EDA used to compare labor costs in the CBA, as New Jersey's minimum wage law was soon to take effect, and two, EDA's further declination rationale based on the lack of an updated letter of intent for the alternate property in Suffern. In sum, Ritz asserts that the EDA's use of point-in-time in comparing labor costs in the CBA is arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable in that point-in-time methodology is inconsistent with a full economic analysis required by the program statute and regulations. Ritz also asserts that EDA is a stop from declining the application due to the authority's own inaction and rejection of the letter of intent. The appeal fails on both points. Pursuant to the GROW Act, the grant must be a material factor in a company's decision to retain, relocate, or expand operations in New Jersey. To that end, the applicant is required to provide documentation demonstrating material factor, including a full economic analysis of all locations under consideration. With regard to the first argument, Ritz must demonstrate that the authority's employment of point in time is arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. Ritz asserts that the EDA erroneously rejected its annual payroll projection in the CBA, which was based on actual and projected data, and which took into account the increase in New Jersey's minimum wage to $15 per hour in 2024. Ritz contends the rejection of this payroll analysis was based on the EDA's adoption of a point-in-time methodology for annual payroll, which EDA asserts was the typical or conventional method. It is important to note that the phrase full economic analysis is not defined in the statute or regulations. According to John Rosenfeld, EDA's current director of audit and compliance, and who was in charge of the Grow New Jersey program at EDA from inception until approximately May of 2017, EDA consistently employed point-in-time costs in its analysis. This consistency in employing point-in-time was further corroborated during this appeal review by Mark Shirishi, EDA Incentives Resolution Officer, who drafted the original board declination memo. In explaining the point-in-time utilization, Mr. Rosenfeld articulated that EDA presumes over time data variances will tend to cancel out and certain costs cannot be reliably projected 10 or 15 years into the future. To account for this, EDA weighs these variables to be balanced out and not vary substantially in proportion over time. In essence, point in time, cost differentials are presumed more or less static into the future. This is also the case with the cost of labor. Ritz is correct that its payroll costs in New York will be less, at least for an indeterminate duration, and if EDA were to depart from its methodology. Ritz is certainly aware that labor costs are not static, even in the face of legally mandated increases in wages, as in the present instance here in New Jersey. In 2016, Ritz left its prior location in Brooklyn to seek pay less for labor in New Jersey after New York increased its minimum wage. This undermines the argument that point-in-time wage comparison is arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable in the context of awarding tax credits for up to 10 years. In addition, the law is well established that executive agencies such as EDA have broad discretion and are afforded deference in the administration of the legislative policy objectives for which they have been tasked. This deference comes from the understanding that a state agency brings experience and specialized knowledge to its task of administering and regulating a legislative enactment within its field of expertise. As such, EDA's consistent employment of point-in-time and the statutorily required full economic analysis cannot be determined to be, quote, in direct violation of its own rules and regulations, as asserted by Ritz in its appeal. In other words, a full economic analysis is not in any way fatal to or otherwise limiting of point-in-time cost comparisons for the purpose of the diligent award of tax incentives. In the end, Ritz failed to persuade that EDA was inconsistent in employing point-in-time, or that point-in-time methodology is arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable, or that it is otherwise prohibited by the statute. With regard to the second argument, which contends the EDA erroneously rejected the letter of intent provided with its application in June of 2019 because it was not executed by both parties and it had no end date. The record is clear and undisputed that during its review, the EDA requested an updated letter of intent multiple times from Ritz. During this process, on January 28, 2020, Ritz declared, quote, the EDA should continue to process and evaluate this application based on the information it already has, meaning no refresh of the document. As part of the application, the statute requires companies to submit to EDA a full economic analysis of all locations under consideration by the business. All lease agreements, ownership documents, or substantially similar documentation for the potential out-of-state location alternatives to the extent they exist. The statute states, with respect to this information and any other information being followed by the authority, that the authority shall independently verify and confirm the business's assertion that the jobs are at risk of leaving the state. In October 2020, an EDA staffer conducted an internet search which revealed undisclosed litigation connected to the property. The property owner, Suffern Partners LLC, quoted in the article, stated, quote, the lawsuit has clouded the title and has left the entity unable to lease, refinance, or sell the property or get new title insurance, end quote. In addition, this hearing officer researched Rockland County property records in connection with this appeal. The search revealed that the property owner had been recently involved in a number of lawsuits, including several New York State and four federal cases, three of which were bankruptcy, challenging title to the property or otherwise connected to its disposition. The search also revealed several Liz pendants, at least four, filed against the property, some of which were active before and during the pendency of this application. When queried on this, Rich replied that it was unaware of the litigation until several months after application and that it would not have affected its ability to lease the property. Clearly, it is axiomatic that the EDA has a duty to exercise diligence in the administration of its programs. Part of that diligence is the exercise of its authority to request relevant supplementary material at any time during the application review process, including obtaining updated LOI. EDA is not bound by documents or conditions static to the time of application as Ritz contends. Things change, documents and plans may grow stale, but unaltered is EDA's ongoing obligation to ensure companies qualify for tax incentives at the time of application, through approval, and afterwards. Ritz relatedly claims that EDA is stopped from denying the application due to EDA's own inaction. Ritz asserts that EDA's delay in processing the Ritz application has barred its authority to deny the application in this case. So the delay is brought about by Ritz's refusal to provide an updated LOI, which the EDA requested at least twice, and the significant challenges presented by the COVID-19 pandemic cannot go unrecognized. In the end, the argument that EDA is stopped from conducting the necessary and legally mandated due diligence in the administration of tax credits is without merit and not worthy of further consideration. Upon examination of the assembled record, applicable statutes and regulations, and based upon the above analysis, I conclude that the authority demonstrated sufficient bases in terms of both the sufficiency of its analyses and its process, review process, for its decision to deny this application for a tax incentive.
All right. Operator, do we have a representative of the applicant on the line for a response?
We do. A person speaking on behalf of the applicant may speak before the board votes on the appeal. This individual should press 1 and 0 on your telephone keypad to be recognized to speak. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated. The board will acknowledge Lee Winter of WRE Consulting, who will be speaking on behalf of RIT Services.
Board members, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Lee Winter, and I am with WRE Consulting, and we are based in Summit, New Jersey. WRE assists companies with site selection and economic incentives, and we assisted Ritz Hotel Services in its Grow New Jersey application for economic incentives. I've been in the field of economic development for well over 20 years, starting at New York City's Economic Development Corp, and then from there went to the private sector, basically a 50-50 split between public and private. So I spent a lot of time on both sides of the table. And we've also worked across the country in many different states with many different economic development organizations. And I can say that without a doubt, EDA conducts the most thorough due diligence and vetting of information submitted by applicants by far than any other state, municipality, or organization. And EDA has a long and impressive record of requiring cost assumptions that must be documented or they'll be discarded, and for doing in-depth, some might say exhaustive analysis. But that is a testament and a compliment to the hard work and dedication of the New Jersey EDA staff. I know there's been a lot of talk about point in time and ongoing costs, but let's not forget that we just heard Marcus Salduti, the EDA's hearing officer, say that New Jersey is the more expensive state due to legally required different wage structures between New York and New Jersey. And, you know, that's kind of the basis of where we are today. And there's also this point in time and this full, what does full mean in the context of a full economic analysis? Our submission clearly demonstrated that New Jersey was the more expensive state. We had documented cost savings in excess of $14 million over the term. That would be $11 million just for the difference in cost of wages and another $3.5 million for documented cost savings due to EasyPass, because in Suffern, Ritz Hotels, which does something like 250 truck crossings over the bridge per day to go to New York, would take the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge or the Tappan Zee Bridge, and the difference in price was so substantial that it was a $3.5 million savings. Now, the EasyPass savings, even though they were documented for some reason, were just discarded. We never really got an explanation as to why. But together, it was over $14 million of savings. So I don't know what to say about it, but we're dwelling so much on this point in time and ongoing costs, and to me, it's just basic common sense. And I'll try to keep this short because it doesn't need to be so complicated. What we're discussing is really, in its essence, a basic comparison, something we often do without even thinking about it, like when we go to the supermarket. Other times, I guess it's more formalized as such when we go looking for a car. And that's what we're looking at here today, a basic analysis. So if you were making a decision, would you try to get the best and most complete information and then make an apples-to-apples comparison? Or would you disregard known facts and numbers and then try to make it an apples-to-oranges comparison? Of course, it's a rhetorical question. You would not do that. No one else would, because it doesn't make sense. But that's what we're being asked to believe here today, that the EDA wants you to believe that even though it is using wrong information in its analysis, it's okay. And you should uphold the faulty decision-making because that is the way we've always done it. Now, I'm not making this up. I mean, this is an instance where truth is stranger than fiction. This is what the EDA stated in its written response on the appeal. It said, typically, that is the way it's been done. And Marcus goes and quotes John Rosenfield, who last was on the incentive side in 2017, 5 years ago. We had documented evidence to the contrary from project underwriters from 2018 and 2019 showing that that is not, or at least maybe it was true in 2017 when John Rosenfield was heading it up, but it's not true now, and we showed that. So typically, that's the way we've always done it, is actually wrong. Now, obviously, that's the way we've always done it is a terrible reason to do something. But it, like I said, it's not the way EDA has operated in the past. And even if it was, there are numerous examples as to why it shouldn't be the method going forward, because EDA always insists on full documented costs. So just for a sec, let's discuss point in time versus annual ongoing costs. EDA's own rules and their guidance provides examples of what a one-time cost is. For example, it lists a building purchase or a building renovation. And for ongoing costs, it provides another example, such as annual payroll or rental payments. Point-in-time treatment of a recurring and escalating cost means that they are taking an arbitrary point in time and simply multiplying it for 15 years. They're taking a recurring cost and treating it like a one-time cost. In that case, who gets to choose the year that will be repeated 15 times? It simply doesn't make sense. And by the way, I probably should have mentioned this at the onset, but point in time is a new term. It's invented, I suspect, just for this appeal. Never before have we heard this used, and it's nowhere in the rules or the guidance or the examples. So going back to the car example, it would be as if you had a specific car in mind and you found the exact same car at two different car dealerships. One dealer offers you a 3-year lease and the other dealer offers you also a 3-year lease but gives you the first 3 months free. But then after that, the monthly payment's much higher. So in making your comparison, you take the first 3 months and say it's zero payments per month and I'm going to use that for the full 36 months of the lease? I don't think so, because after the third month, the payments will be much higher. If you were me, you would probably do a separate analysis, summing up the payments, maybe averaging them, maybe annuitizing them, maybe present valuing them. Maybe you would do all of those things. But the EDA expects us to believe that, no, they would just take that first month's payment and use that every single time. So, as I've mentioned, I've been in this field for a long time, and every project I've done, I've done dozens of projects just under the Grow New Jersey program, every one we've done, we've included a separate supplemental spreadsheet to accompany the CBA, which the cost-benefit analysis, and the supplemental spreadsheet goes into great detail on the ongoing costs. It sums them up, it escalates them, NPVs them, discounts them, annuitizes them, and then we take... Usually it's the average, not the average, and we plug that into the CBA for the ongoing cost. It's like the tip of the iceberg, but it's supported by so much more information, which is the attached spreadsheet. The single number that EDA talks about represents a much bigger thing than just willy-nilly picking a number. And I might add that in all these years, the EDA never said, nah, Lee, don't bother giving us that supplemental spreadsheet. We don't need that, because they always use it. And in addition, the EDA has provided much practical guidance on this. For example, in our appeal, I think it's Exhibit D, it quotes an EDA underwriter after 2017, I think it was 2019, stating that payroll will be treated the same unless New York costs are documented. So here we have the opposite situation. Payroll will be treated differently if the costs are documented. That is exactly what we did for this project. We showed that New York State's minimum wage laws are much lower than New Jersey's. Now, I know Marcus says, well, you know, things could change. But this is the law, and it's prescribed for year after year after year. So, yes, things can change. And I'm kind of curious why he thinks, even though that's codified in law, that could change, but a letter of intent that's non-binding and informal, that has to be, you know, updated all the time. It's just inconsistent. So anyway, back to EDA's guidance. On the website today, if you go to EDA's website, you can find current guidance on this treatment. They have, EDA has a 95-page sample application that is a highly detailed, I'm quoting, step-by-step walkthrough of this application to best prepare for the full application process. And in that sample application, it talks about estimated payroll, and it states, quoting again, annual applicants can include estimates that reflect the different labor market conditions across New Jersey and the alternate site. That is exactly what we did here. This is current guidance, not historical. It's right there on page 68 of the PDF, and you can look for it yourself. It's at EDA's homepage. Go to Financing and Incentives, scroll down to the Emerge program, and then to the tab that says Application Process, and then scroll down further, and you'll see a hyperlink. So you see, EDA was contradicting itself then, and it is contradicting itself now. It's not common sense. It doesn't make sense. And EDA dismisses all of our documentation showing it's treating RITs in a contradictory manner. It says it's anecdotal. It's not anecdotal. Yeah. Anecdotal is like me telling you stories about my dog. This is documented. This is EDA's own words by their own underwriters. So EDA is made clear.
Quinn, can we start to wrap this up, please?
I'm sorry. I will. I apologize. Look, we've got past practice, past comments, future guidance. It all points to point in time being nothing more than an invention. Now, with regard to timing and the LOI, we put in a complete application in June of 2019. And it sat for over 2 months before we heard back from the EDA, despite us calling every week to say, do you need anything? Do you have any questions? Is the application not complete? And then we finally got questions after 2 months. In the past, it would take 4 weeks for an application to go from receipt to recommendation to the board. And EDA, in its defense, says, well, you know, COVID-19. So let's think about that. June of 2019, we submitted the application. COVID wasn't an issue until March of 2020. That's 9 months. That's a defense, or is it admission of guilt? Does anyone really here expect a non-binding offer from a landlord to remain valid for 9 months, or in this case, 2 years? I mean, most LOIs have self-destruct clauses in them stating that the proposal shall automatically expire if not accepted. So time is the enemy, especially in real estate. So if you let something sit, it's going to die, and anything can happen. And there's always litigation on a property. And Cushman & Wakefield was the broker on the project, and they said, we wouldn't be wasting our time here. We're 100% commissioned employees. If we don't lease, we don't get paid. So, and I'm sorry, but I'm concluding now. As I mentioned in the beginning, I've been in this field for many years, public and private, and I've been working with EDA since the days of the BEEP program. For those who don't know, that was back in the 90s. In that time, economic incentives were the carrot responsible for bringing tens of thousands of jobs to Manhattan, from Manhattan to New Jersey. And more recently, with the Grow New Jersey program, we've moved thousands of jobs from Brooklyn to New Jersey, where typically companies take more space. They double the employees. They free up space in Brooklyn where other companies can move in. In short, it's a win for New Jersey. It's a win for New York. And it's a win for the region. And there's no doubt in my mind that these incentives were the carrot that got these companies to take the plunge. And looking down the road, it's important, vitally important, that companies believe in the incentives and believe in the EDA. Reputation is at stake. And if companies lose confidence that even if they satisfy program requirements, EDA is still not going to honor its own rules, then it's a sad day for New Jersey, and thousands of jobs will be lost or not created. New Jersey could have the best economic incentive programs in the country, but they only work if we have faith in them. So here with RITs, we have 200 hardworking employees and their families in Patterson that will have no jobs, no doubt, if these incentives are not approved. And for no reason, RITs clearly satisfied all the requirements of the program and met the material factor test. Ritz Hotels is really an extraordinary company and an employer. Mark Siegel, who is the general manager and one of the three principals of the company, he knows every employee personally and their families. Many have been with him from the days that the company was in Brooklyn back in 2016. He actually learned to speak Spanish because most of his employees speak Spanish, and Mark's from Ukraine, so no mean task. And finally...
Paul Whiteley.
What?
And no, during, if you could please, really.
I'm 30 please. Seconds. During the depths of COVID, when his business was down 94%, He reached into his own pocket and used his own savings, his own personal funds, to keep the company afloat and the lights on. That's the kind of person Mark is. Now with COVID in the rearview mirror, there is light at the end of the tunnel. So please, for the sake of the hardworking Ritz employees in Patterson and for all the other companies that we can entice to move to this great state, I ask that you look to the facts and the merits and approve this application for economic incentives. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lee. Marcus, I have three statements for you, and just tell me if they're accurate. One, the point-in-time analysis that we employed in evaluating this application is entirely consistent with EDA past practice. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. And we made at least two requests for an updated LOI during the pendency of their application period. Is that correct?
Correct.
And despite the severe apparent economic disparities between New Jersey and New York, Ritz Hotel continues to operate in Patterson, New Jersey, correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. Do any other board members have questions for Marcus? If there's no additional questions for Marcus, can I get a motion to approve the declination?
This is Rosemarie. I recommend
thank you,
the motion.
I'll
thank you, Rosemarie. Thank you, Jenny. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item. Hearing officer's recommendation, Respire RX Pharmaceuticals, 2021 Technology Business Tax Certificate Transfer Program Declination. Nicholas Fauci, Legal Affairs Officer, Legal Affairs presenting. Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Good morning. This matter is an appeal of a declination of an application for the 2021 Technology Business Tax Certificate Transfer Program, commonly referred to as the Net Operating Loss or NOL program. To qualify for the NOL program, an applicant must meet the definition of a technology or biotechnology business, have unused amounts of research and development tax credits and or unused net operating loss carryover, and three, meet the definition of new or expanding. On June 23, 2021, Respire RX Pharmaceuticals, Inc. applied for the 2021 NOL program and submitted an employee log with its application as is required. Because EDA staff was unable to sufficiently verify, based on this log, that the company employed the requisite number of full-time employees, EDA staff requested additional due diligence materials from the company. These materials requested included signed certifications from their employees certifying that they work at least 35 hours per week. The company ultimately failed to provide all of the materials requested, including the signed certifications. Accordingly, the authority's board declined its application on the basis that the company did not meet the definition of new or expanded. This appeal followed. On appeal, Respire RX Pharmaceuticals argues that the authority's board erred in denying its program application because it failed to accept an alternative standard of service based on the generally accepted custom and practice of its industry as to what constitutes a full-time employee. The company further argues that it is inappropriate for its employees to sign a certification stating that they actually work at least 35 hours a week, as had been requested by EDA staff, in contrast to being available to work at least 35 hours a week. Respire RX Pharmaceuticals' arguments are unpersuasive. Firstly, the applicant has failed to sufficiently articulate an acceptable alternative standard of service based on the custom and practice of its industry. Secondly, the company ignores the fact that the definition of full-time employee contained in the program's enabling statute is controlling here. Rather, it relies on general citations to the Fair Labor Standards Act as well as alternative definitions of full-time employee that other government agencies use without connecting these definitions to the custom and practice of the company's industry. Thirdly, it is EDA's policy to request additional due diligence documentation and information when staff deems that additional verification is needed to determine whether an applicant meets the program's eligibility guidelines, as was the case here. Finally, the company was on notice when the information was first requested that failure to provide it would put the company's application at risk of being denied. As such, I have concluded that the authority's board has demonstrated a sufficient basis for the decision to deny this application. I'm happy to answer any questions the board members may have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Operator, do we have a response from a representative of the company?
Thank you again. A person speaking on behalf of the applicant may speak before the board's vote on the appeal. This individual should press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be recognized to speak. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated with. And the board will acknowledge Jeff Margolis, Senior Vice President, Secretary, Treasurer, Chief Financial Officer, and member of the Board of Directors, who will speak on behalf of Aspire Rx Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Margolis, please press 1-0.
Margolis?
And please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Jeff Margolis speaking. I'm the Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and other things for Aspirex Pharmaceuticals, and I'd like to speak with you about our appeal today. Mr. Fauci did explain in some degree of detail the sequence of events. We did not respond with certain information because that information does not exist, nor is it actually required. For example, one of the requests was for offer letters. We can't produce an offer letter that does not exist. We explained that the offer letters did not exist. We could create them if we wanted to, but that would be disingenuous. They did not exist, but they weren't necessary because the acceptance, the offer and the acceptance was evidenced by the fact that people were on payroll. We also determined that although the EDA declined based on the fact that we were making the statement that being available 35 hours per week was constituted full-time employment. And we did so based on the availability of that definition or the use of that definition to the EDA within its own rules. We cited that, render any other standard of service generally accepted by customer practice as full-time employment. My argument is if we're willing to pay them for full-time employment, that is full-time employment. And so we believe that we met the standard. We had on payroll and paid 11 employees in the state of New Jersey. We also have a great loyalty to New Jersey. We moved this company from California to New Jersey 9 years ago. And we did so because we wanted to work in New Jersey. We wanted this company to operate in New Jersey. We also want to hire a number of people as we expand our research and development efforts in New Jersey that would otherwise be unemployed or underemployed. For example, we would hire administrative assistants, statisticians, bookkeepers, executive assistants. We would hire new graduates from high schools and from colleges. We would hire people who have opted out of the workforce if they wanted back in. For example, burnt-out nurses and healthcare workers who just don't want to be in hospitals anymore could work at a biotech company. And the fact that we have flexible hours and the fact that we allow virtual employment is appealing to people who have taken advantage of the great resignation. We can bring these people back into the workforce. But we need the assistance of the EDA to help make that happen. And the ability for us to effectively sell our NOLs would enable that in spades. We would anticipate the ability to not only keep the, well, we now are down to 10 because we've lost one of those employees, the 10 employees on board and add at least another 10 over the course of the next year if we were to be able to achieve this transfer of this business tax certificate. And that's it. I wanted to keep it short, and I just hope that you can see through to the availability of the flexibility of your definition of full-time employment that you have on your books. And yes, we did cite that there are multiple definitions of full-time employment under the Fair Labor Standards Act, Federal Act, under various other departments and divisions of New Jersey, by the various different unions, et cetera. That variability speaks to today's circumstances. Today's circumstances are different than they were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago. And we would hope that you would see through to our appeal. Thank you for your time.
Great. Jeff, thank you. Thank you for keeping your comments concise. Do we have any questions for Nicholas? If there's no questions for Nicholas, can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Jessica Maloney, second.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? All right, we're moving on to the film and digital media tax credit. We've got a handful of things here to go through. The first item, before we get to the handful of specific films or TV-related approvals, a Universal Television LLC, The Enemy Within Season 1, a New Jersey Films Tax Credit Program Modification. Matt Sestrich, Senior Program Officer, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Matt.
Thank you, Chairman. We are requesting the members to approve an award increase for Universal Television LLC, the Film Tax Credit Award, for the production of The Enemy Within Season 1. Originally approved back in November 2019, the project received an award of over $14.3 million based on qualified costs of over $44.9 million. Shortly after approval, EDA received clarifying information on previously excluded expenses totaling $8.4 million under the amortization line item in our budget. This info explained the expenses included normally qualifying costs like wages and salaries, materials, and rental expenses. Had the authority received this information during the underwriting process prior to the board, the cost would have been included as eligible and included in the award calculation, which is consistent with our prior treatment of this particular line item. With the additional eligible costs, the award would increase to $17,083,038. EDA staff recommends the members approve this increase. Thanks.
Do you have any questions for Matt? There's no questions for Matt. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion, Jennifer.
Jenny Bauer,
on.
I'll move it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Jenny, can I make that a second?
Certainly.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? So it looks like we have about six individual votes here. Matt, we'll continue with Matt. He'll make one presentation, and then we'll take the six individual votes. Matt, please continue.
Thank you. So to quickly run through the six, so the EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of the six applications under the Film Digital Media Tax Credit Program. We've received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure each is reasonable for industry standards. All the film content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the six recommendation for approval is over $10.4 million. The first project under consideration is Apple Slice Productions, who's responsible for the production of Jewels. We are recommending an award of over $4.8 million. The second application is DIGA LLC, which will produce America's Next Big Deal. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and we are recommending an approval of just over $3.4 million. The third project is Eye on the Ball Enterprises, Inc., responsible for the production of Severance Season 1. we are recommending an award of over $1.6 million. The fourth application under consideration is for Bound, the movie LLC, who is the production company responsible for Bound. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and we are recommending an award of over $183,000. The fifth application is for 3 Days Rising, LLC, who is responsible for the production of 3 Days Rising, and we are recommending an award of over $154,000 on this project. The final and sixth application under consideration is for Smarty James, LLC, who is responsible for the production of Sparkle, and we are recommending an award of over $78,000 on this project. Each of these will need its own separate vote, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions for Matt about any of these individual items? If not, let's proceed to the voting. Apple Slice Production to credit in the amount of almost $4.9 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item is DIGA LLC, tax credit in the amount of almost $3.5 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
I'll move it, Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Socrates Maloney.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item is Eye on the Ball Enterprises, Inc., tax credit in the amount of almost $1.7 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
You can get a motion.
Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, I think we're hitting the 18-mile marker here. People are getting a little fatigued. Let's try to keep it up. Bound the Movie, LLC, tax credit in the amount of just over $180,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Noreen, Giblin, second.
Thanks, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? All right. Next item. 3 Days Rising, LLC, tax credit in the amount of just over $150,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Jennifer Keith Maloney.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, last one. Smarty James, LLC, a tax credit in the amount of almost $80,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Second. Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to move to the Director's Loan Review Committee, and a handful of items under that. Marcia Marley is our chair. Would you like to offer a few comments before we review?
Yes, thank you, Chairman, and I will keep them very brief. I know this is a long meeting. The DLRC met on February 24th when the staff presented to the committee's review a revision in requirements for the Main Street Recovery Finance Program, a New Jersey Accelerate Loan application for ABF Creative, Inc., as well as a third amended stated bond resolution for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC. I want to thank the staff for their thorough presentation of these projects that are now being presented to the entire board for approval. Chairman, I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Marcia. All right. First item, Main Street Recovery Finance Program, Micro Business Loan Product Revision. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Community Development and Small Business Services. Christina.
Thank you. This action item is seeking the board's approval to change the eligibility requirement of the Main Street Micro Business Loan. This product was previously approved at our November board and will be launching soon. The change that this memo highlights will allow applicants to be in operation for at least 6 months prior to their application date rather than 6 months prior to the date the application is made live to the public. This will allow the eligibility window to continue on beyond the date the application is made live to the public, so the product can actually live on throughout the pilot phase or as long as there is funding to support the approvals. And that is it. Happy to take any questions, but very simple.
Great. Thank you, Christina. Any questions for Christina? If there's no questions for Christina, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon motion. Motion
approved.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're moving to next item, New Jersey Accelerate, ABF Creative, Inc. Madhvia Bhatia, Program Manager, Product Operations presenting. Madhvia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, everybody. Hi. I'm presenting, actually, ABF Creative's loan application on behalf of my colleague, Monica Valenzuela. Last month, board approved two loans under the NG Accelerate program, and this is the third one. As board might recall, NG Accelerate is a pilot program in which NJEDA participates with best-in-class accelerators. An accelerator is a formalized group that provides education, mentorship, and access to resources to early-stage technology companies to accelerate growth of these companies. The first step in the program is the approval of an accelerator program. Eligibility requirement for the accelerator program include a thorough selection process for companies, cohort-based training structure, educational curriculum, formal graduation for program completion, and financial investment in graduate companies. So far, NJEDA has approved 4 accelerator programs under the program guideline. The program offers 3 financial benefits. The first one is the financial benefit to the accelerator program itself, and this is to produce and host events in New Jersey. The second financial benefit is a rent grant for approved accelerator graduate companies. The third financial benefit is a loan investment in approved accelerator graduate companies. This is a financial benefit where NJEDA matches the one-on-one loan that the accelerator program provides to the graduate companies up to $250,000, and there is a 5% bonus for businesses that are certified as minority and women-owned. The loan is in form of 10-year convertible note with a 3% fixed interest rate. There are no payments required for first 7 years. The payments begin in year 8, and there are no prepayment penalties. And NJEDA also receives warrant for an amount equal to 50% of the loan. Today's request is for Newark-based ABF Creative. ABF Creative graduated from Morgan Stanley Multicultural Innovation Lab. MSMIL is an in-house startup accelerator program at Morgan Stanley. MSMIL promotes financial inclusion and capital access for early-stage tech companies that are led by women and multicultural entrepreneurs. MIL was actually the first accelerator accepted under the NG Accelerate program, and it has also been recognized by NJEDA for demonstrating meaningful written policies and practices for attracting and promoting companies that are owned by women and minority persons. ABF Creative is a data-driven multicultural podcast network. The company also provides podcast production and variety of marketing services such as research studies and media buying. The company has developed a proprietary story time framework that helps it process and develop the award-winning audio entertainment content. The production actually engages in underserved multicultural listeners and provides advertisers, sponsors, and partners with effective vehicles for brand messaging. The company's founding team possess a deep understanding of the target audience and have extensive experience in audio content production. MSMIL invested $250,000 in ABF Creative. ABF Creative has also provided a minority owned business certification. As such, the request is for a loan amount of $262,500. I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Do you have any questions for Madhvi?
Hi, this is Rosemary. I have one question on page 5. It says ABF Creative Inc. It says that they have 5 full-time employees and 1 part-time. But then the second sentence says 1 full-time employee is on W-2 while the rest are 1099. But 1099 is not an employee. So I'm confused as to how we're counting that. I mean, if part of the requirements is they have employees.
Right. So part of the program requirement is that the company needs to have 50% of their employees in New Jersey. The company meets that requirement. As you can understand, these are the startup companies, actually, the loan amount they receive. So they are trying their best, actually, to provide employees flexibility while they scale their business. So company does meet the employee requirement under the program that they need to have 50% of their employees based in New Jersey and have 2 founding members with equity ownership in the company. That requirement the company meets.
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding. Are we counting now 1099s as employees?
No, we are counting 1 full-time employee in New Jersey, but they still have like 1099, and company has full intention of converting those employees into full-time employees once they have the financial wherewithal to support them. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Rosemary, I would just add, it's not atypical for companies at this early stage to utilize 1099 just to make the cash go a little further. Once they receive sufficient funding, then most typically they bring them on as W-2 employees and provide benefits as well. I hope that's helpful.
No, I understand that part. I just think that we just probably need to be a little clearer because it just feels like we're using a 1099 to count as an employee. And I understand that concept, and that concept or that practice makes sense. It's just the clarity of the narrative as to how we're counting if we're asked to vote on something like that. That's all.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, Anne-Marie, I appreciate your actually feedback, and we will keep that in mind for our future requests.
Great. Thank you, Madhvi. Other questions for Madhvi? If there's no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Noreen. Jenny, can I move you to a second?
Certainly.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on to...
I'm recusing. We have investments in ABF.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. Next item is Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund. The item is a Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund projects approved by the DEP. Michael Dealey, DEP Manager, Underwriting, presenting. Michael.
Thank you. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program,
We have one municipal application seeking approval. The funding request is a renewable energy grant to the National Park Borough in the amount of $2,986,335.86. This is a supplemental request to $6,162,107, the BEP grants previously approved to complete remediation work at the former landfill. The proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with the ongoing remedial action at a former landfill which has environmental areas of concern. It is the applicant's intent upon completion of the remediation to redevelop the site for renewable energy. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Do we have any questions for Michael? If we have no questions for Michael, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to stick with Michael on the petroleum underground storage tank. We have three projects here. Michael, why don't you walk us through them?
Okay. Under DEP's Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Program, we are seeking approval for a residential and two commercial applications. These applications require board approval as the requested amounts exceed EDA staff's $100,000 delegation. The first request for the cover page is from Joseph Martin in the amount of $216,826.72. The proceeds will be used to remove a leaking underground storage tank and complete the required remediation. The second request is a commercial grant in the amount of $132,123 from Georgia's Friendly Service, which is an auto repair facility in Bergen County. This is a supplemental request to $580,196, a DEP grant previously approved to remove underground storage tanks and associated contamination. The requested funds will be used to complete remediation work and required reporting. Our final request for the Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Program is a commercial grant in the amount of $83,901.79 from Warren Isaacs, former owner of Midas Auto Service in Union County. This is a supplemental request to $320,546 of DEP grants previously approved to remove underground storage tanks and the associated contamination. These requested funds will be used to complete the remediation work and required reporting. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Do we have any questions for Michael? If we have no questions for Michael, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second? Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're moving on to bonds. Project is Linden Renewable Energy, LLC, third amended and restated bond resolution. Backed by popular demand, the smoothest voice in New Jersey, David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting.
Wow. Thank you. The members are requested to approve a third amended and restated bond resolution for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC. This resolution will increase the total cost of the project from $281.2 million to $320 million, and the maximum amount of financial assistance requested of the authority from $214 million to $240 million. The resolution will also renew the authority's volume cap allocation for the issuance of bonds and grant the applicant a new 8-month period with an additional 30-day extension to close on the approved project. This third amendment is needed as Linden has continued to experience numerous delays developing a project, including most recently the need to obtain an access easement over a private road that is owned by several commercial businesses. This financing requires access endorsements from the title company that can only be secured by having individual access easements with each landowner. The process of negotiating the easements has taken longer than anticipated. Also, Linden's project produces a renewable natural gas product that will be sold to a Canadian-based gas supply utility under a long-term agreement. Linden has executed a final term sheet with this utility and expects shortly to execute the final agreement. Once the final agreement has been executed, the utility files for regulatory approval. Regulatory approval is expected to be completed within the next 6 to 8 weeks. The applicant remains committed to closing on the bonds and completing the project and has incurred approximately $14 million in project costs to date. The applicant expects all outstanding items to be completed in time to close the bonds by the end of May of this year. EDA staff, in recognition of the applicant working through this large and very complex project during these uncertain economic times, recommends that the EDA provide continued support in the form of an increased volume cap allocation as requested and longer than standard runway to close in the bonds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, David. We missed you last month. Any questions for David here? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko, approve.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? All right. We're now going to open the public comment portion of the meeting. I'd first like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, it's Aisha Glover. I do have to jump, so thank you for a very informative meeting.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topics on which the remarks will be given, and will be limited to a maximum of 3 minutes to speak, and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period. And speakers may also provide any related documents attached to an email to staff. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, please press 1 then 0 at this time. Thank you. And our first question is from Charlie Cardavale. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good morning, board members. I'm reaching out again about New Brunswick Development Corporation. The project you're working with them, of course, is the Innovation Hub. And I, you know, attended the Housing Authority meeting, and they got their redevelopment agreement in place. And I just want to understand the timeline for that project. This says construction would commence within 18 months, and then the developers would get another 33 months after that to complete the project. And by my math, that means the buildings might not open until 2026. Is that the EDA's understanding of the timeline for that project?
Yeah, hey, Charlie, it's Tim. I'm not 100% sure what agreement you're referring to. I'm not disputing it. I'm just not sure what you're referring to. Happy to follow up with you offline on the construction schedule. I don't have that right in front of me, but we're pushing ahead as fast as appropriate there.
Okay. Thanks for that. And I did want to follow up. I know I wrote a letter to the board on December 8th, and, you know, in that letter identified some issues with DevCo's 2020 tax forms, including a $3.79 million bad debt expense. And, you know, I don't think you have it in front of you, but just in case you do, I want to ask if anybody's looked into that, and you know, if anybody shares my concerns at all on the board about you know, the situation and you know, this project.
Uh,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Charlie, I haven't reviewed any of recently any of DevCo's financial statements. The board prepared for the agenda for today's meeting. It's something that we can look into in the future. A bad debt expense would imply that a creditor did not make good on a debt that DevCo provided to them, and so not knowing their balance sheet, I don't know if that threatens their creditworthiness or ability to perform on projects in the future.
Okay, well, thank you for the response. I do, we'll draw your attention to the December 8th letter, and it does have, my concerns and our concerns as the 5th and 6th Ward Neighborhood Association outlined. I do appreciate the EDA having a dialogue, and I did get a meeting after that letter, and just wanted to follow up on those things. So I appreciate you continuing the dialogue today. Hope everybody's doing well on this rainy Wednesday. Thank you for your time. Have a good one.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. And again, if you do have a question, please press 1 then 0 at this time. And at this time, there are no questions in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I'm now going to make a motion to enter executive session to discuss the approval of a grant agreement with the Department of Treasury for project funding, additional project expenditure, and project-specific delegated authority policy, which involve anticipated contract negotiations where disclosure could adversely impact the public interest, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. A vote will take place after the board returns to public session. Thank you, operator.
Thank you. One moment, please.
We have to, apologize, we have to make a motion. Take a vote.
I can make the motion, right? Do I need to have it voted on?
Yes. We need
can I get a second? Can I have a second?
Second, Jennifer Keys Maloney.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion?
No.
I understand. Thank you. All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? And I know Elizabeth is recusing from this executive session. All righty. Now we can enter executive session.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the board has now entered the executive session. For the members of the public, you may hold the line. Please continue to hold. You will hear silence until they rejoin. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we do thank you for your patience. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, we do thank you for your patience. Your conference will be back underway shortly. Please continue to hold.
Thank you, and we are back in public session.
Great. Thank you, operator. I'd like to make a motion to approve entering into a grant agreement with the New Jersey Department of the Treasury, additional project expenditure, and a New Jersey Windport-specific delegated authority policy as discussed in executive session. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, if there's no additional comments, I'd like to hear participation and now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
I'll second, Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. You got to run through the finish line here. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. And using AT&T conferencing service, you may now disconnect.